Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start. Same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becklass AB to CV 2024 Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
San Antonio District Judge resigns after a federal corruption probe.
A former San Antonio, Texas judge goes to federal prison after pleading guilty to accepting bribes in exchange for rigging cases in his court. Angus McGinty committed the ultimate judicial sin. Why did you do it?
I did it because I was foolish.
Listen to How to Bribe a Judge on RevolverPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast. John Anik and Kenny Florian.
I fucking love them. I can't get enough of them.
Let's hear that blast next.
Big jab there from Duffy and Brett Beer is hurt now.
Down goes Duffy on call. Brett Beer does it again.
Rock'em sock'em robots here. Oh my goodness.
Hyperbole.
They're a couple of absolutely self-involved bullshit artists.
Here are your hosts, John Anik and Kenny Florian.
I'm sure a lot of exciting stuff happened in college basketball in the NBA this weekend, but did you guys have two no contests on one main card? Last week, we opened the show by telling our listeners and viewers they should start their own podcast because you got to get some of this stuff off your chest. And once again, we feel like we're up against the clock because a UFC fight night gives us so much to unpack. It is Monday, March 15th, 2021. It's episode 292 of the Anik and Florian podcast, coming up on the six-year anniversary of this bad boy and episode 300. But enough about that. UFC fight night, Edwards versus Muhammad. By the way, if you are watching and you notice a different backdrop for Kenneth Allen Florian, he is in the Pacific time zone today in Southern California. Would not tell me and Cody why he's there in our pre-show meeting. We asked, too. Morning, buddy. Bright and early.
How you doing, man?
I'm good, man. Why are you waking up so early? If we knew you were in LA, we wouldn't have done this show at 7:30 a.m. Pacific.
Oh, I'm a beast, dude. I'm a savage. I'll get up whenever. If it's for the podcast.
You just won't fight on a preliminary card, but you'd do just about anything else. So a lot to get to today. We will recap UFC Fight Night, Edwards versus Muhammad, and we will talk to Longo in about a half an hour. One of his guys won a belt on the regional scene, so it was nice for Ray to have that distraction given how everything went down with Aljamain Sterling. And Ryan Tracy, one of our longtime listeners representing Travis Matthew, the golf clothing company, will come up in the main event challenge and make picks for UFC Fight Night, Brunson versus Holland. But we begin with headlines, and there are sure as fuck a whole lot of them after UFC Fight Night, Edwards versus Muhammad. Let us start with the main event. Anticlimactic is probably the wrong word, but it goes into the books as a no contest due to an accidental eye poke at 18 seconds of round two. And as many people know, Kenny, Bilal Muhammad has a video podcast on our channel, right? So hopefully people can understand we are coming at this from an objective standpoint, regardless of where we fall on this. As far as I'm concerned, this is really disappointing for Bilal in his first UFC main event. I hope he gets another opportunity to headline in his next fight, even if it's not against Leon Edwards, who was warned once prior before the seminal blow to the eye that ended the fight. Doesn't appear as though there's any permanent damage for Bilal Muhammad, but certainly a disappointing conclusion to the main event. Ken, flow your thoughts.
No question. You know, I was really looking forward to that fight and really interested to see how that was going to go down. Leon Edwards, first of all, was looking good up until that point. And, you know, it doesn't look great. The fact that, you know, he was warned prior to that. I don't think he was trying to poke Bilal in his eye. However, it is a style that a lot of times we get used to, especially using boxing gloves or tie gloves or whatever it is. you know, you're used to kind of framing on people's head, and it ends up becoming this thing that you get used to doing. And it's not something that you're just going to be able to erase necessarily during the fight. It becomes habitual. And I think that was the case with Leon Edwards. It's very unfortunate. It's something he's going to have to change. Because again, when it happened, I thought it was more than just eye poke. I thought that Bilal was, you know, maybe missing an eye. I mean, it looked horrible. And Bilal is one of the toughest guys I've seen compete.
Yes.
And he immediately was in tremendous pain and just kind of writhing in pain on the octagon canvas. And I was really concerned. And it looked like it went deep into the eye. And thankfully, there's nothing serious. There's no serious damage to the eye. But man, that was awful. It was awful for Bilal, who had, you know, made a quick turnaround to compete against Leon Edwards in this big main event, and Leon Edwards as well, who was away for a long time, and we just didn't get the answer we wanted. You know, it's really unfortunate.
Thankfully, the ringside physician was convicted and stopped the fight, as Herb Dean sort of waywardly told Bilal to calm down and control his breathing. Bilal knew right away the fight was over. That's why he was crying. You know, a lot of people need to wake the fuck up, as far as I'm concerned, when I'm watching this whole thing on Saturday night. But as far as this main event is concerned, there are a lot of fighters who are dismissive of ring rust as a theme. Dominic Cruz, Leon Edwards, and certainly Leon Edwards didn't look rusty as a striker per se. But how can you not suggest that having not had any accrued octagon time in 2020 doesn't hurt his cause a little bit when it comes to throwing an eye poke that ultimately resulted in this fight going away? Bilal said on these very airwaves a couple weeks ago that he doesn't even spar guys who have that habit in training of extending those fingers outright, because he doesn't want to risk it. He has had eye issues in the past. And I don't know, I just feel awful for Bilal. And I do think there's some criticism to be levied at Leon Edwards, not for the performance per se, but when you're in a cycle competing every 3 months, I think these things might happen less. That's all I'm saying.
I think there's that's a valid point. I think that those are things that can be minimized. And, you know, again, it becomes this habit. You know, John Jones is one of those guys that gets accused of it a lot because, you know, he is trying to frame or trying to keep you away. He has that long reach. And a lot of fighters will kind of frame their glove on the forehead. Well, with the UFC glove, that's not something you could really do because your fingers are hanging out there.
Right.
And it kind of becomes this default mode. Every time you throw a kick or a punch, you kind of frame. And for Leon Edwards, it's simple. He's going to have to change that. I know he probably feels bad about it. I'm just glad that Bilal is going to be okay and there's no permanent damage to his eye because, again, you know, Michael Bisping is one of those guys who had suffered eye injuries. I know a lot of other guys that have, you know, have torn retinas and other issues. So
yeah.
It was really unfortunate, and it happened very early in the fight, which made it almost all the more frustrating.
I wanted to hear more from Bisping given his history, but for whatever reason, we didn't hear a ton from Bisping in the moment. And again, I'm not trying to be hypercritical of Leon Edwards. I understand why Leon wants a title fight and wants to spin things forward because he had been out for so long. But I do think if you are to be sincere in your apology, you kind of got to give Bilal a rematch, and maybe they can headline these guys on a UFC fight night in the not too distant future. Again, I have respect to Leon Edwards with the number 3 next to his name, but given the nature of this foul, regardless of what was happening in the fight up until that point, you know, I do believe it would only be right for these guys to run it back. I hear a lot of people now suggesting other matchups for Bilal, Sean Brady, and otherwise. I would hate to see this opportunity for Bilal against a top 5 guy just go away because of a foul like this. As far as accidental fouls versus intentional fouls, Ken Flo, we had an instance on the main card to begin things, Eric Anders against Darren Stewart, and we will finish up on Leon and Bilal in a second, but that fight went into the books as a no contest due to an illegal knee. That knee was deemed to be unintentional, whereas Piotr Jan's 2 weeks prior was deemed to be intentional. Do you have anything for us on that? Because as far as I'm concerned, nobody is intending to commit a foul, but both fighters in this instance appeared to be intending to throw the knee. So why is one intentional and one unintentional?
Yeah, I mean, listen, both are throwing the knee, you know, and for Eric Anders, He didn't get warned by the referee, right? It wasn't that thing prior to it happening. So I think that was a part of it. And, you know, no one had told him he was a down fighter. But at the same time, he threw the knee while his opponent was on the ground. And it kind of – it did hit the glove, but it went right through and landed right on his face. And it was one of those things, again, where he was winning that fight. Emotions are running high. You're doing well. You're doing your best to try to finish the fight. He had hurt him several times in that fight. Throws the knee, lands it to a down opponent right to his head, and the fight gets stopped, and it goes to no decision. I mean, it was a no decision, the second one of the night, a second one on the main card, just crazy situation. And again, for Eric Anders, who was winning that fight, I mean, it's a hard lesson. And I hope that for any fighter who's watching that, they're learning from both these instances.
Yeah.
Just awful.
So Leon Edwards' foul was accidental. If an accidental foul, and I'm reading right from the ABC rules here, if an accidental foul causes an injury severe enough for the referee to stop the belt will result in either a no contest or DQ if stopped before half of the scheduled rounds plus 1 second of the fight has been completed. So obviously the round does come into play and did in this instance. And for Leon Edwards, sort of pawing the hand out there as he is throwing a kick is a lot different, I think, than a fighter throwing a knee. And I feel awful for Eric Anders, right? I mean, he looked outstanding. He was bludgeoning Darren Stewart. But again, there's just not enough consistency for me when it comes to the referees in this instance, in these instances. And I would encourage everybody to Google the Association of Boxing Commissions and Combative Sports Unified Rules of Mixed Martial Arts. And they were amended August 3rd, 2016, then again, August 1st, 2018. I always have them printed. Thankfully, we have Mark Ratner there on the broadcast, Ken Flo, to help with certain details. You know, the NFL obviously has Mike Pereira and other guys who help when it comes to the rules stuff. But I don't know, man. I don't know. I just feel awful for Bilal. I feel badly for Leon as well to have this type of result after years away. How would you like to see them proceed with Leon Edwards at this point, given the nature of this particular result?
Listen, I think that you wait for Bilal to get better. I hope that he's able to make a quick recovery and be able to get back to training and prepare for another fight. But again, that's like, what, his third fight in a short time. It seems like he wants to run it back, and I would love to see it. And I think Leon Edwards, I'm sure, feels that Bilal deserves that rematch just based on what happened. You know, Leon was looking fantastic prior to that point. He was looking sharp. He was keeping Bilal on the outside. He was using a lot of different weapons. And then the eye poke happened. So I think it's something that should, be scheduled in the short term, assuming Bilal's good to go. And hopefully we see that again, man. I think it's a fight that makes sense, given that Bilal now, you know, his ranking and exactly what happened. So let's do it.
Stylistically, I know a lot of people wanted to see if Bilal Muhammad could extend Leon Edwards, and we were sort of robbed of that potential reality. But you're right. Leon Edwards is an absolute monster. And if you've listened to this podcast, you know how highly we think of him and think of him as championship metal and championship material. But again, I think he needs to close this chapter and get some finality with Bilal before he moves forward.
Exactly. And I think it's hard for him to move on and get that championship fight he wanted after something like that. Right. So it needs to be erased in some way, shape or form. And I think the best way to do that is to go out there, you know, have a fight against Bilal and get it finalized in the right way.
And generally speaking, my heart goes out to all of these athletes, right? Whether it's Piotr Jan or Aljamain Sterling or Leon and Bilal, they're all dealing with different things. And the fight game's crazy. You know, that's why when I talk about prohibitive favorites and not laying minus 380, because you never know what's going to happen. And, you know, I feel bad for Gavin Tucker. I want to talk about that fight for a second, Kempfel. I know last minute you did change your pick from Dan Ige to Gavin Tucker. And, you know, we're all going to celebrate Dan Ige today. There is no doubt about it. I couldn't be happier for this human being to have this type of result, $50,000 bonus for the new father or new father to be, I think. But Kempfel, what were your thoughts on a fight that I thought could be the fight of the night that lasted just 22 seconds?
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, you don't run headfirst into a guy like a Dan Ige. These are the same things that can deliver these very exciting fights can also deliver a quick knockout. Dan Ige is known for having heavy hands. This is a guy who is battle tested and proven. And you know, he ran in a direct straight line right in front of Dan Ige. Dan Ige threw a short shot right down the pipe and put him out. Just a brutal shot. So you can't trade. You know, what fighters need to realize is it doesn't matter what you can do to another fighter. It doesn't matter if I think I'm the better striker, I'm the more technical guy. That probably was Gavin Tucker, which is probably why I switched my pickup.
Yeah.
You know, he is more versatile in some ways than Dan Ige. He's more technical in some ways. But anytime you trade in the pocket with someone, you have the ability to go to sleep and get caught. And that's exactly what happened. Both of those guys just ran in the center of the octagon and just traded. For Dan Ige, it could have been him going out. But Ige landed first, Tucker's out. And I think it's a fantastic lesson for Gavin. You can't just go out there and trade. He didn't get his head off the center line. He was just thinking about hurting Dan Ige, and he was not defensively responsible and got caught with a big shot.
And I still stand by the fact that I think Gavin Tucker is the best Canadian skill for skill on the roster right now, and I think he'll bounce back in a big way. He's 13-2. This is the first time he's been finished as a pro, but I just don't have enough good things to say about Dan Ige and his chief corner, Eric Nixick, and all of the skill development. You got to think that they put in a lot of hard work and learned a lot of hard lessons in that 25-minute main event with Calvin Kattar last summer. And, you know, I know Ige was sort of disappointed in some respects that he couldn't show everybody all of that skill development. But when you can get in and out of there in 22 seconds and live up to your 50K moniker the way he did, power to Dan Ige. And again, I can't emphasize enough his willingness to take on all comers, guys like Ryan Hall and Gavin Tucker that people don't want to fight.
Exactly.
So good on you, Dan Ige. Cash the fucking check. And I look forward to congratulating you in person in the not too distant future. And again, he's ranked at featherweight, so Dan Ige is getting a big fight next for sure. What'd you make of the co-main event, light heavyweight, Ryan Spann over Misha Serkunov? You know, Serkunov sometimes just doesn't look like he wants to be there. Other times looks like an absolute killer. But all credit to Ryan Spann. Big back-to-back weeks for Fortis MMA with Kennedy and Zechiku, and now Ryan Spann.
Yeah, listen, I'm not surprised that Spann was able to get a knockout like that. Misha Serkunov is one of those guys that, again, we talked about this prior to the fight. He's a hard guy to bet on, and he really, more than anything else, should be seeking consistency with his performances, and we just haven't seen that over the course of his UFC career. And he really is a talented guy. He can do a lot of things in the octagon. He's improved as a striker. You know, he came in as a highly touted grappler, wrestler, submission guy, and we're getting these inconsistent performances. And it just seemed like he was getting bullied out there by Ryan Spann. Once Spann started catching him, it seemed like Spann was just all over him and never allowed Misha to get back into the fight. So excellent performance by Spann. He's back on track, man. Excellent finish.
He's a really chill guy, but if you follow Ryan Spann on Instagram, you know that there is sort of this renewed focus after the loss to Johnny Walker. But man, every time I see this guy at 205 pounds, you know, he looks like 6'6", super long, really a guy with a lot of potential. And I also think too, and I think about this a lot on the golf course, and people may laugh, but like, can you walk up to the ball and like be an athlete for a second and stop like overthinking every little thing? It's a little bit like jujitsu, right? All these different steps to the golf swing, and I'm trying to perfect it when sometimes I need to just walk up and be an athlete. And I got to think for the general, Saif Sayoud, that's part of the messaging for Ryan Spann. Can you just go in there and pretend your life depends on it, which it kind of does, and like go knock a guy out?
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. I think it's really easy to overthink things in the fight game. And more than anything else, one of the biggest gifts you can give yourself is just understanding that, you know, you only focus on controlling what you can control. And, you know, anytime you start overthinking it and thinking what could happen, what you need to do here or there, just trust that your training was enough and that you're going to go out there and compete hard. You've been in there many times. A guy like Ryan Spann is already an experienced guy. And, you know, go out there and fight the way you train.
Another main card result at flyweight, Mateus Nicolau over Manel Kopp, split decision. I know Kopp was very surprised, seemed like the commentators were, but maybe to a lesser degree. You know, I thought this was a close fight at flyweight, and again, I mean, I'm going scoring on you today, but here is the 10-9 language, folks. A round is to be scored as a 10-9 round when a contestant wins by a close margin where the winning fighter lands the better strikes or utilizes effective grappling during the round. So I thought there were three 10-9 rounds, Kenny. I thought this was a close fight, and I don't know that either fighter should be too upset about the result. What'd you think of this one at flyweight?
It was a close fight. You know, for at the end of the fight, it seemed like Kopp was, you know, pouring it on at the end of yes. that third round. He was the guy who was pursuing the fight. He got off to a little bit of a late start. I thought Nicolau did a great job in that first round, was throwing a lot of different strikes. I thought he won the first. I thought Kopp won the second. And once he started turning it on, it looked like Kopp was going to take over and get the win. That third round, you know, it seemed like Nicolau was successful a little bit early on, and Kopp kind of did a great job at the end of the round. I thought Kopp was going to get the win, but certainly a close fight. And it's not one of those things where you could say, oh, that was a robbery. It was close. Yeah, I was kind of surprised.
Here's the 10-8 language. A round is to be scored as a 10-8 round when a contestant wins the round by a large margin by impact, dominance, and duration of striking or grappling in a round. So it seems to me what a lot of us view as a clear 10-9, you know, he beat that guy by a considerable margin. That's a 10-9 for the red corner. Right. It's actually supposed to be a 10-8, you know. Right. But again, this is why I constantly am reminding myself of this language so I can try to be an effective conduit to the fans and communicator. But it's confusing. There's a lot of different layers to it, but congrats to Mateus Nicolau. I remember sitting down with him when he was 21, 22 years old, talking about UFC championship aspirations. He's got a lot of skills and had to lean on the heart and the mental toughness late. And Manel Kopp, again, this is a tough one for him, right? Back-to-back UFC losses now, but again, a fighter that that I think very highly of as well. And then lastly, Davy Grant, right? I mean, you gotta love this guy. Jonathan Martinez was a pretty big favorite. Factory X has a lot of talented young strikers, Ken Flo, but Davy Grant found the button, didn't miss, and you know, he's willing to walk through fire to get it done as usual. I love Davy Grant.
Really happy for that guy. You know, he's one of the nicest dudes in the sport. I mean, very likable. I actually met him way back in the day when I was fighting, and he was not in the UFC at that point, but he's a guy who is a student of the game. And man, has he improved his striking or what? I mean, he looked great out there. That was definitely the best I've seen him, and really had to battle back. He got hit with some big shots and was able to hang in there and show that toughness, and got an awesome win, man. That knockout was absolutely brutal, man. He's a killer.
So great. And you're right to sum him up as one of the game's true good guys. And we also congratulate Matthew Semmelsberger. A 16-second knockout over Jason Witt, $50,000 bonus for him. And you got to think that is life-changing for the former football player there. All right. Last thing on Bilal and Leon Edwards. And again, I just feel so awful for the way this ended. Thankfully, no long-term damage seemingly for Bilal. Remember the name Muhammad. Do you remember the worst eye poke that you absorbed either in training or in an actual fight? And I hope for the sake of the dude who got you in training, that there was like an exit door pretty close by. You don't want to be on Ken Flo's bad side. My wife will often say, oh, it's good that you're on that person's good side. 6 years doing this podcast, I'm still on Ken Flo's good side, but it seemed like you shake your head as if to say, thankfully you don't remember getting completely fucking torched in the eye.
Yeah, I've been lucky, man. I haven't taken an eye poke that was that bad, thankfully, in a fight or in training.
Wow.
I mean, a little bit. I remember with BJ Penn, a little bit. There was like kind of a thumb a little bit when he was kind of trying to uppercut me. I took a thumb to the eye when I had him on a single leg, but not horrible, thankfully. I remember taking a big shot to the nuts when I was sparring. I usually wore my tie cup, my metal cup. I forgot it. I was like, I'll just wear this plastic cup. What can go wrong?
Yeah.
And I took the worst knee ever. And my training night was pretty much done after that.
I remember you talking about that steel tie cup on MMA Live in 2008. Yeah. Also, congratulations go out to Angela Hill, of course, 30-27 times three over Ashley Yoder. See, I even think in that fight, there was a round that was dominant enough that might have warranted a 10-8. But I fucking digress. Ray Longo's on hold. Let us get to the Ray Longo Minute.
Now time for the Ray Longo Minute.
I want you to punch a hole in this fucking chest. That's what I want.
The Ray Longo Minute.
Starring Ray Longo.
The
John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast.
It's taking that hair a long time to grow back. If you want to grow it back to your shoulders, it's going to take a while.
Yeah. Is that the way you're starting the show?
Yeah.
Out?
Anything else, or are we going to let you go? I got to go. I got to call you back.
No, yeah, we should just put it. We should just put it on that. His hair takes a long time. I think it's growing fast. This was a short hair.
Our good friend Bilal, remember the name Muhammad, finally gets his first UFC main event, which should not be lost on anybody how important that is for a fighter, the poster and everything else. And granted, there were extenuating circumstances that resulted in him getting this main event. His head coach, Lewis Taylor, his dear friend, was not in his corner because of COVID-19, which is a whole nother variable that we didn't get into. But 18 seconds into round two, second eye poke of the fight from Leon Edwards, and this one ends things via no contest. What'd you think of the main event, my man?
I mean, first off, if you're watching that fight and your heart doesn't break for Bilal Muhammad, there's something wrong with you. I mean, it's horrible. I mean, you know, I was talking to somebody, and even just his reaction could crush you. You know what I mean? Because that was real. You're right. You know, so, you know, my thing was, I've been injured. Like, sometimes I get injured. It's not the injury. I'm thinking of everything attached to that injury. That's what I think he was doing, was like, fuck, I finally got my shot. And he knew it was over with that eye. His eye was so bad, he knew that was over. And I think that was his reaction, was, you got to be fucking kidding me. We just got started. And again, the problem is, you know, I don't think Leon Edwards won any fans, because he's not even, like, you got to give the guy an immediate rematch.
That's right.
This is the thing. Instead of even changing the rules, I think this would help everybody. Immediate rematch in the clause if it's a foul. It has to be, because that way, you know, Edwards gets penalized anyway, right? You know what I mean? He's got weight. Right. You know, if the guy gets up to a year to fight you, because he was told to keep his fingers, you know, up. Don't point them straight ahead. Again,
right.
And keep your fucking hand closed.
I agree.
Honestly, I'm hearing shit, boxing gloves. I'm used to, I don't give a shit. You're poking the guy in the eye. You didn't go to punch. You went to punch him. It was like, you know, it was that punch kick, right? Same side. I think
it's a range finder, right? Pawn hand, whatever you're doing.
I mean, I don't know, man, but that was hard. And then, I don't even know. Like, I didn't even hear the guy ask him, I hope his eye's okay.
No, I did think he apologized, Kenny, but I just feel like
he wants to move on, though, John. He's not saying, let's rerun it.
Well, Kenny, I feel like because Leon Edwards is not in this active competing schedule and he missed over a year, that he's like, hey, man, I got to spin this thing forward. But I think we're all in agreement that they need to run this thing back as soon as possible.
Well, the fair thing is to run it back. And same thing with Aljo and Jan. I mean, what a crazy, you know, run it back, period.
Well, and that's why Aljo did himself no favors, even though we all know him and we know it was innocuous. Yeah. But going down any sort of Cejudo path, when Aljo knows in his heart that he's running it back with Piotr Jan. So even though he was having a little bit fun with that narrative, that opened him up to another avalanche of criticism, because not unlike Leon Edwards, you know, people thought Aljo was trying to spin it forward without a rematch.
Right. Well, but I'm telling you, first of all, Aljo's, the guy is, I love him. He's fucking crazy.
What?
He never, like, in any conversation I had with him, there was never a conversation other than the rematch with Petr Yan.
Of course.
It's still as of, you know, there. So, yeah, the guy, you know, listen, this is the problem with social media. You know, so look, he could have went that route with Cejudo and go, you know what? Okay, I got an opportunity. Like, I'm sure Chael Sonnen's advice would be, this is the perfect scene. He's the heel. Be the heel.
Right.
You know, like, he'll go that route. And Aljo probably could have did that and drove 30 million people insane based on the shit I was getting.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I don't know. You know, but that was never even brought up or thought of. So, who knows? He's not even active. What sense does that even make?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's the guy he calls out, a guy that retired, and everybody's going crazy, right? What is that?
Right. You know, no, like, you're right, man. Social media is.
But you're right, though. So that did him, though, obviously it did him no harm, or it really helped him because he just added another million pay-per-view buys. I don't know.
Well, right. Then there's that. No, I know. It's social media is such an inconvenient truth. I mean, I'm just outside trying to smoke a joint this weekend. I come back to 35 tweets saying, hey, you need to learn the rules. It's like, bitch, I ain't even fucking working right now. Okay, I'm home.
The rules to what? How to light a joint up? What rules are we?
Yeah, right. I kind of used a little help with that, but no.
Were you in your neighbor's backyard? Is that the rules he's talking about?
Yeah. We're talking about like illegal knees and stuff because we were talking about Eric Anders. I wasn't watching that fight live, so I didn't understand what people were talking about in terms of that illegal knee. Did you see that, by the way, Eric Anders and Darren Stewart?
Yeah. No.
Can you explain to me why that knee is unintentional, but Piotr Jan's was intentional?
I can't explain it.
Okay. All right. Because I know I put Kenfo on the spot earlier.
Yeah. No, I'll tell you one thing. It was a lead knee, so it wasn't as hard for sure. Like he didn't launch him. Like, so I think it was more of a reaction only because it was first off, I'm grabbing for straws.
Yeah. Right.
I like Eric Anders. So I don't take, we know he's not a dirty fighter.
Not at all.
You know, but I
No, I love Eric Anders. He was in the best shape of his life. I'm excited to see this Eric Anders version 2.0. And look what he was doing as a plus 160 underdog.
He looked good
against Darren Stewart. But I mean, he intended to throw the knee, period. He intended to throw it.
Yeah, and I think he I'm really flip-flopping. I think his only defense, Kenny, is to say he was aiming for his hand and his hand was covering his head.
There you go.
Exactly.
That's where I'm at.
The old hand strike with the knee. Exactly.
Guys, I've been saying this for years. It's a fucking kangaroo court. If you think it isn't, you know, with all of the things that have definitely you're out of your mind, you know. Yeah. And we could always go to the resident expert. What did McCarthy say about that? Anybody hear anything on that?
I did not. I did not.
I'm sure he's got an answer.
But again, the inconsistency.
He saw a lot of eye injuries. He thought Bilal Muhammad was faking it. He should have.
I mean, it's like it's unbelievable. That's
a joke, obviously, because
I know
I'll be getting attacked later.
But no, the inconsistencies, the indecision. You know, I want a referee to come down and look at Bilal Muhammad and to have the conviction and the balls to just call the fight right then and there. Thankfully, the doctor came in and was like, yeah, this thing's over. But there seems to be this sensitivity, whether it's the main event or a title's on the line or whatever. There are a lot of referees and doctors that aren't thinking about anything but fighter safety. And they go in and they make the right decision right away.
Yeah, look, you want to get the job done right. First off, the ref, I think, should be taken completely out because the refs are more driven by popular demand, right?
Yes.
Nobody wants to look like a bad guy. Doctors don't give a fuck, man.
I agree.
They'll stop that fucking fight. They're always going to err on the side of caution. I'm going to tell you, if a doctor tells you you could continue, I'm going to say you could continue. You can continue because they're never going to do that. You know they're always going to stop that fight. They have to. They have to play it safe. Whereas the refs, they don't want to look bad. The fans are who knows if that's the case, but they're subject more to that than the doctors are. So I would the refs completely out of it because what happens after a while, and if you listen to these guys, they think they are doctors. I've seen that, you know, that makes them better than the doctors. I mean,
I also think there's that fear that they don't want to, you know, be the guy that stopped the fight and now the UFC is kind of angry at them when their primary concern is for the fighter. And it's like, you ask Bilal if he can see and Bilal says he can't see anything out of that eye. Or if a fighter says I'm seeing double or, you know, I'm in tremendous pain. It feels like my eye dropped out. And they're like, I'm going to give him another 10 seconds to see
if he
calms down, feels better. You're like, dude, it's not happening, okay? Yeah. It's not going to happen that day or probably the next day. The fight's done. If a fighter says they can't see out of that eye, it's done. He's not fighting with one eye.
Well, Kenny, I'm going to make it's even worse. And if I'm wrong on this, you know, attack me. I mean, I guess I'm used to that at this point. But, but you know, so when Vellante was in Jersey, right? He gets poked in the eye. So let me tell you, think of this logic. Vellante gets poked in the eye, right? The ref at the time goes, can you see? Vellante goes, no, they stopped the fight. So, right, which is good. So, but Vellante could have continued. He's just saying, I just got poked in the eye.
Right, right.
So the logic is, so this is what they change as the ref. And they, you could, I might be wrong on this, but so they tell the refs, from now on, you don't ask the guy if he could see, because of course he can't see. So this is how concerned they are with you. Don't ask him if he could see.
Right, right.
Just ask him how he feels. And then, you know, we bring the doctor in and let him look at it, because nobody gives a fuck.
Right.
Of course you can't see. You just got a thumb in the fucking eye. Right. No matter what. Who could see?
What we should do is just before fighters get out there and whatever it is, we poke them in the eye. We do the old, like, you know, the Three Stooges eye poke.
Right.
And then we hit them over the head with a baseball bat and we just have them fight. It's because we don't give a shit about the fighters.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so that's it. So we don't, from now on, guys, don't ask the guy if he could see, because we're obligated to stop the fight. God forbid. We're obligated to stop the fight.
Well, and I said it last week.
I mean, but in this shit, they'll just, I don't know. I find it insane, but
and I said last week they opened Aljamain Sterling up to unnecessary criticism because there was all this time that expired. And I know largely you like the way, I think it was Mark Smith, handled that situation, you know, but there were 4 minutes that elapsed in my mind that the fight should have been stopped prior. And again, I'm reading right from the rules here, Ray. Intentional fouls. If an intentional foul causes an injury and the bout is allowed to continue, the referee shall notify the authorities and deduct 2 points from the fighter who caused the foul. And then, of course, Piotr Jan probably would have just, you know, finished things from there, and the 2 points wouldn't have mattered. But it would have been 2 points. You know, we did suggest that on broadcast. Not one. Would have been two.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. 2 points would – okay, but what if the guy can't continue, though?
Well, that's the point, is that, right, you stop the fight then and there. Right. No, they did the right thing in that instance.
My point with Mark Smith, because I don't know what the – honestly, what the correct – you got to follow whatever protocol they have or whatever the rules are. My point was he showed a lot of compassion. That was what my
– yes.
He was concerned, you know.
Great referee, great human being.
Like, and I'm going on that. I'll go with, you know, there's no right way to do wrong and there's no wrong way to do right. You know what I mean? That guy felt for Aljo. He was compassionate. Whether he took an extra 2 or 3 minutes, you know, I think based on what I saw after the fight, he took those 2 or 3 minutes with Aljo's best interest in.
I think
so. Right or wrong. That's all I'm saying. I thought the guy, that's what I saw. Not an arrogant guy. It's my way or the highway, or, you know, like
100% agree.
That's the difference. That's all.
I just see him sort of writhing in pain. You know, the bout can't continue. It's like, is Aljo miraculously in 2 minutes going to say, you know what? I'm starting to gain some clarity. Let me get back to my feet and say, I don't know. I just felt like it was an eventuality. So
yeah, my point, even with the faking, no matter what, everybody's agreeing it was a hard knee. I don't think anybody disagrees with that.
Yeah.
So obviously you compromised. You have to be. That's, you know, a fight-ending blow in a normal situation, right?
Yeah.
So where do we get to the faking part, though? I don't even care. He should fake. Who gives a shit?
Well, right.
What are you talking about? The guy just had his head blasted off. Like, you want to say he was faking? Faking what? The degree of how bad he was hurt? When nobody's turning to the other guy and going, what the fuck would possess you to knee a guy like that?
That's what people need to kind of realize is I think kind of the best way to think about it is thinking in terms of what is intentional. You know, it's almost like if I'm going in to hit someone and I kind of skim my head off of somebody and we collide heads, that's an unintentional headbutt. Yeah. But if I make the motion with my head to purposely headbutt another dude, that's an intentional headbutt. If I purposely am trying to knee someone, that's an intentional knee. I meant to knee. It hit the guy's head. That's an intentional knee. And it's unfortunate, but I don't know. It's crazy. I think a lot of fighters hopefully are learning from this.
So the only way Aljo could have won in that situation is if he would have had bleeding on the brain and he was in a fucking coma. You know, I don't know. That's it. I guess that means, you know, I've seen a million concussions myself. You know what I mean? Like, and there's different, I guess there is, you know, you're going to go to the hospital. They're going to release you 99%.
Yes.
It's very rare that, you know, you have blood on the brain. If you're in that, if that happens, we got a totally different situation. So to even say, yeah, he was released from the hospital and he's fine. Yeah, everybody is. You know,
so true. I've been to the hospital three times with concussions. Twice I was scanned and released. Yeah. And then one time they actually let me go without even doing any sort of scan. So.
Right. So, I mean, you know, that's the point. Like, of course you're okay. Like, it's a precaution, but it's not taken away that you got blasted.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And we send Aljo back in there and he takes another one of those knees. What do you think the second impact is going to do on top of the first
impact? You're right. I mean, affect his ability to be a father, maybe.
That's what I say. Yeah. Fucking faking. Like, what? Right. What can you fake?
Yeah.
He wasn't as wobbly as he should have been. Or, you know, he didn't start talking about, you know, what he did last summer when they were asking him the questions because he was completely out of it. I've seen everything. I've looked. Normally, guys, they get concussed. They'll ask me the same question 20 times in a row. Was it that, you know, and those guys, I'm calling the ambulance for. I've seen a million things. I saw a guy get dropped in the gym, right? Big guy. Guy dropped in the gym. I go, you all right? He goes, I'm 6 years old and I'm on a farm. The guy never left Queens in his life, right? So I'm like, jeez, oh, fucking shit. Yeah. I leave him. I think he's joking because, you know, we have a
right.
And then luckily there was a doctor. She goes, the guy's not kidding.
Yeah.
He's out. So, you know, we have to drive him home,
right?
Read him the concussion protocol to his wife. Guy never even went to the hospital.
Yeah.
He was okay.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? Like, some of this shit is, you know, because look, obviously, I get mad when people that know this shit don't fucking, you know, they their comments, they want a narrative, they want to get out there and they're going to, you know, that's the flow, you know, just like politics, you're going to flow in that direction, right? But they know what the deal is. You know, a lot of people get concussed and a lot of people are fine the next day. You know, that guy came back to the gym and was laughing when I told him that. But, you know, does he remember it? No, he was concussed, but some guys get blasted and they're just shooken up.
Yeah.
You still send them. I don't know. Whatever.
Old McDonald had a farm. All right. We got 60 seconds. We'll get you out of here on this.
Come on, man. This is it.
Bhumi Nahuda.
Come on, man.
CFFC flyweight champion coming to an octagon near you in all likelihood. How about Bhumi, man? I've been kind of tracking this kid from afar a little bit. Our producer, Cody Merrow, is a big fan. And some nice shiny gold for Team Sarah Longo. What can you tell us about Pumi's regional title victory, my man?
I'll tell you what, Bhumi saved the day for me because he loses that fight. I'm on this show saying I'm done. I'm quitting. But what a breath of fresh air this kid is, man. He worked his ass off. If everybody worked as hard as Bhumi, they'd get the same results. That's what I'm going to say. He works his fucking ass off. And I'm going to tell you a funny story. In the third round, like, he's dominating the fight, right? In the third round, he gets kicked in the balls bad and he's down. And I'm like, fuck my life, man. So what do I got to go? I start screaming, take the belt. They'll DQ you. You'll get the belt. Stay down. No, I'm only joking. Man. I know that's what all the haters want to hear. But in my head, I'm going, holy shit, they're going to DQ this guy. And Pumi's getting, I mean, it'll be two in a week. It's his fault, right? But he got up and obviously finished the fight. Unanimous decision. But the kid told me, he goes, dude, that changed the fight. I mean, I was hurt. Like, people don't get it. You get kicked in the balls and you continue. Okay, so you must be fine. Some guys are going to go through it. But you're not the same guy you were before that kick in the balls.
Yeah.
Right?
No, I only wish that for those people who are sitting on their couch thinking that a fighter is not tough enough. It's like, do you have a child around who can kick in the fucking balls? Have them come over and do it.
And
see if you can then fight another man for another 10 minutes if need be.
And then, John, we're all evolving, right? With all the info we have on CTE. Look, man, I come from a place where you got dropped in the gym, you're sparring the next day. Or you, at that time, you're out of the gym because that's what everybody's looking for. How tough are you? Can you? But now it's that mentality, like a lot of stuff that we change. That's just not the mentality. You know, Aljo's not going to do nothing for a minimum of a month. You know what I mean? You know, obviously the UFC wants to run that fight back as quick as possible. But what does that mean?
No, of course. Hey, thanks for your time. As always, we're coming up on the 6-year anniversary of the Anakin Florian podcast. Wow. I don't know if we have anything planned, but you were with us for the first episode, the first week of April 2015.
Yeah, Ray.
Still going strong, Raymond. Still going strong.
Let's go. We got to be doing something right, no?
I think we're doing a few things right. I know Ken Flo's upset because I did a deep dive into the rule book today, but it is what it is.
I can only wish that the hatred I've received in the last week never happens to anybody.
It's all love here.
Balanced out by the love you get on the podcast, right?
What a rough week this was, I tell you. If I could get by this, I'll be good to go.
Hey, another 10 years of hitting mitts, and that initiative begins in earnest here in 15 minutes. So have a good private, and we'll talk to you next Monday, if not sooner, my brother.
All right, guys, and please send my my love to Bilal, man. I hope his eyes are right, and I hope if the world is right, he gets an immediate rematch with that guy.
Yeah, with you. We will. Thank you, Ray.
So, man, I'll talk to you.
And you can catch Bilal Muhammad, Remember the Show. My twin brother, Jason Anik, co-hosts every Thursday around 8:30 p.m. Eastern on this very channel. And they will be back Thursday. And we'll see if Bilal goes eye patch for the game show this week. But Remember the Show live this Thursday night right here on the Anik and Florian Podcast YouTube channel. All right. UFC Fight Night. Brunson versus Holland live this Saturday. Let us get to the main event challenge.
It's the main event challenge. Anik.
The time is most definitely now.
Florian.
I finished fights. I'm going to do everything possible to win.
The main event challenge. The John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast.
Main event challenge is brought to you by Oddshark, your source for the latest odds from leading authorities, expert editorial content, and detailed matchup picks with expert in-depth analysis for each game. Their free stats, numbers, and trends will help you make the sharp picks on game day. Head over to Oddshark and start playing like a shark today. That's oddshark.com. Don't forget the second S. Quick update on the standings. Team Anik, led by Ian Parker, who is not here to gloat, by the way, won the week 4-0. Kempo had Dan Ige. Late change to Gavin Tucker. So Team Anik takes the lead 30-27. And with us to make picks today, my man, good friend of the program, longtime listener, massive UFC fan. So my expectations are high for this man. The golf and clothing company, Travis Matthew, this man works very hard for them. He is Ryan Tracy, and he is with us. Good morning, my man. It's great to see you.
Thank you, my friend. It's a pleasure to be on the show. Like I've been telling my wife about 1,000 times last couple of weeks. Now, this is like an honor and privilege of the highest order. Anik, I think you're the best in the business. Told you that numerous times. You know, I'm a big fan of all sports, but I think with the UFC and ESPN and just the general, my last 2 or 3 years, all my fandom has gone really to here. And I think when it comes to a host who's got it all, you've been the best, man. And Kenny, you're a legend, dude. I mean, I was saying to my wife, at least John's a fan and a journalist. And I thought I could relate a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, I don't deserve, like, I bow, man. I don't deserve to
stop.
Fights with the great Kenny Florian, dude. Not only what you've done in the octagon, but around the game and all of the teaching you've done, all the material and what have you. You're my competition this week, so I hope you have a shit week. Obviously, I hope you lose here. But, thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure.
Ryan, you're the man, and I know you're much younger than we are. So, like, Kenny retired October of 2011. He actually retired December of 2011, but his last fight was against Jose Aldo, October of 2011. When would you say you became the avid diehard fan that you are now? Like, were you watching him fight Jose Aldo in 2011? Probably not.
No, I caught up on it, though, over the last couple of weeks. Yeah. So I've been digging back in the books. But, you know, what's funny is, you know, my grandmother's 94, and this week I was over with her, going through her stuff. We're going through, she's kind of getting things out, and her and I were laughing because I was telling her that she had no idea what I was talking about. Of course, but I jumped on the podcast, and we rented UFC like one back from Blockbuster when I stayed with her when I was like however old, 6, 7 or whatever, and watched it where he had no gloves and the one. The one guy was like 300 pounds and the other guy had no gloves. All right. And he got on top of him. And we were laughing about that to where the sport is now. As long as ESPN, huge buzz. And she's like, yeah, I watched the fight night the other night. She didn't say that. But, you know,
right.
It's amazing. Yeah. So I've always been a fan, but really it's been since I had the last 3 or 4 years. I think the whole trajectory with ESPN and the storylines, how much coverage there is and just in around the game, you know, you guys and so many great podcasts to watch during the week while I'm working, I can listen to stuff. And,
right.
But I've the last couple of weeks went back and watched all of the Ken Flo memories, man. And it, yeah. You know, and Kenny, I was thinking the only BJ was coming off of that loss to GSP, right? When he fought you.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's like the most dangerous BJ Penn in the world's history, right? Like who would want to face coming down a weight class? Right. I mean, so, and that's the only guy who's ever submitted you, I think. Ever.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
it's
hey, listen,
so
man.
Funny you say that. It's so funny you say that, RT, because, dude, he fought the fucking best version of BJ. Like, why did Ken Flo have to fight the BJ that was in the shape of his life? Like, couldn't he have fought, like, lazy, soft BJ, you know?
That was Super Saiyan BJ Penn, Ken Flo. So, hey, man, everyone's going to get the back taken from that guy.
All right, we got four picks to make today. It's UFC Fight Night, Brunson versus Holland. And the first fight, this is handpicked by me because it's a prelim fight. It's not even the featured prelim, but I think the stakes are significant. In the lightweight division, Grant Dawson minus 200, Leonardo Santos plus 170. So Ken Flo, I'm going to take you back to June 8th, 2013. You and I called Leo Santos' UFC debut. It was on the equator. In Fortaleza, Brazil, to this day, hottest broadcast environment that I have ever been in. And he hasn't lost throughout this entire time. It's incredible, right, Ryan? 13 fight unbeaten streak. He's 7-0-1 in the UFC. So injuries, inactivity have been a part of the story. What are your thoughts on Leo Santos in this spot here against Grant Dawson?
Leo Santos, what a story. Like you're saying, someone's got to contact his management. Either he wants to fight once a year or once every couple of years or and just hang out in Brazil and come back. Because I know he trains, right? And he's also a corner man. He's been
corner before.
But his, if you look at his record, it's like, why is this guy not fighting for a belt or contending in the title, you know, pitcher as far as his name? Hasn't lost at one draw, I think, since 2009.
Crazy.
And if you do, like, the video research on him, he has a flying armbar on GSP. You guys know that? In the ADCC. So, I mean, as far as a guy who's not afraid to go on the ground and compete, he hasn't lost for all these years. I really like him in this fight just because until you see him lose, you know, I know he had a really rough go in the last fight because he took a couple of it was almost a disqualification because in points because he took two low blows. He also took a shot to the head and the knee all in one fight. But Grant Dawson, man, you know, I'm a Grant Dawson fan. And I think him bumping up a weight class here, right, is a super smart move for him. He's had weight on the last fight issues. I know you had a couple different things, but he's also in the corner, works with Kraus. I think that guys who have a chip on their shoulder are dangerous. And he's coming up a weight class and wants to prove himself. It's a very good fight. I'm glad you called it out. I wasn't prepping for it immediately. I feel like Leo Santos should really win this fight as far as you're looking at history. But I'm going to pick Grant Dawson to come in and really take it. I don't know where, but I think that he's going to come in and be really excited about being in the weight class and have something to prove. And it's going to be a tough night out, though.
16-1 overall for Grant Dawson. Ken Flo, he's 4-0 in the UFC. 2-1 favorite here. He's won 7 in a row. Hopefully he's up 155 pounds for good. You know, we gave him our rookie of the year, at least I did on this show, Kenny, in 2019. Chips to the center of the table on Grant Dawson, and I think now he has found the right weight class. But Leo Santos obviously has a lot of different skills. You don't necessarily know which version you're going to get because of some of the inactivity. What do you make of this one kid at 155 pounds?
This is an interesting fight. I think Grant Dawson has some of the best takedowns I've seen in a long time. Really puts it together very well. I see his biggest weakness being on the feet. I don't think he's the most precise or technical striker, but he is dangerous. And he does a great job of setting up his takedowns. And on the ground, that's where he does his best work. In my mind, he's has excellent ground and pound, good positioning, excellent setups to his submissions, and really good pressure. I don't think that's the best matchup, though, against someone like a Leonardo Santos, who is a true Brazilian jiu-jitsu legend. I mean, the guy has been competing in at a very high level in the jiu-jitsu world for a long time. He was one of the guys that I looked up to when I was coming up. So been a black belt a long time. He also has improved his striking significantly since we called his first fight back in 2013. I think he has sharp hands. I think he has excellent kicks and has really been displaying that classic Novo União style. I like him in this fight. I think, you know, he's a little bit older. He's at the end of his career here a little bit. But I do think he matches up well. And I think he gets the win here against Dawson. I don't think it's going to be easy. I do think Dawson is a guy to watch. But I like Santos here.
and you can get Leo Santos in that plus 170 range. Again, that night in Fort Delays, I will never forget, my dress shirt was completely soaked through before the first prelim. And so our late producer, Bruce Connell, was like, yeah, you got to get your backup shirt. And it's like, bro, I don't bring like a second dress shirt to the show. This is what you're getting. All right, at heavyweight, boys, Tai Tuivasa, modest 245, Dontel Mays plus 205. So, Ryan, Tuivasa, much-needed win his last time out. It was a knockout of Stefan Struve at UFC 254. That halted a three-fight skid. Mays also coming off a win after he started 0-2 in the UFC. What do you think about this one, the big boys, Tuivasa and Dontel Mays?
Yeah, two really big guys for sure. You know, Ty, he lost three in a row, but he was undefeated before that, right? And he had some tough nights out during those fights. And same deal with Dante. Dante Mays is definitely one of those guys in the regional scene. You know, you go back and look at the data on him. He was knocking guys out. Big guy for sure. He's not making featherweight. I can tell you that. His one leg is featherweight. He's a big guy, 6'6", 250. And he came in, Cyril Gane, right off the bat. Yeah, he's not had an easy road. Roque Martinez, I think, was his last fight. Had a big win. But I think Ty's got to get this done. You know, training AKA since 2020. Got a lot of time now with DC. You figure that, you know, he's putting the pieces together. He's a real fun character, but I think he's got, I would even call it a knockout on this one. I don't have to give a round in victory, but I'm not sure where it happened, but I think he's going to find it with wrestling and mixing it up. He's going to find the hands, and Dante Mays is a big guy. And he's tough. He needs this win for sure. He needs to come out. He's a tough guy, but I think Ty's got it.
Yeah, big opportunity for Dontel Mays, Ken Flo, but Tai Tuivasa is the favorite, and with good reason. Pretty good strength of schedule in the UFC. Minus 245 for Tai Tuivasa. No shoeies with the audience after the fact. What do you think, Tuivasa and Mays, Ken Flo? Who do you have?
Yeah, you know, I think Mays has been susceptible to, you know, the submission game. I don't think he's going to be experiencing that here against Tuivasa. But I do think that he is a little bit outgunned here. Tuivasa and his experience, I think, is going to be the difference. Both guys hit very hard. Both are big guys. But I think Tuivasa is eventually going to find a way to catch Mays and get the win.
All right, both guys like Tai Tuivasa. That brings us to the co-main event at 155 pounds. Ken Flo, we will have you lead us off here. Gregor Gillespie, minus 200. Brad Quake Riddell is plus 170. We'll need the round and the method of victory. What a fight. I mean, what a matchup. I really don't know who's going to win. Gillespie is a good friend of mine. He's very calculated. So he's been out, Kenny, since that loss to Kevin Lee. That was all the way back in 2019. You know how hard Gillespie trains, has a girlfriend now that he's very serious about. I think mentally he's in an outstanding spot. But Brad Riddell is a real problem. I think this is a fascinating matchup. Thankfully, I do not have to make a pick, Ken Flo. What do you think about Gillespie and Riddell here Saturday night?
Well, here's the thing. Gillespie sometimes gets caught trading with a lot of guys. And, you know, it doesn't matter that, you know, you maybe have been improving your striking, or, you know, that you want to kind of show the fans that you want to strike. What he does best is take guys down and submit them and control them. This is what he needs to do against Brad Riddell. Riddell is going to be a big time problem on the feet. Riddell is very sharp and very dangerous there. But of course, he's going to be vulnerable to the takedown game. I think that's where Gregor needs to take this fight. It can be hard figuring out how someone's going to come back from a loss, a devastating loss. But you got to believe that Gregor Gillespie and his mindset, he is going to come back stronger and smarter. And I would like to think that he's going to look for a takedown here in this fight. And if he's able to do it, I could see him hitting another, arm triangle type submission. So I'm going to go with Gillespie here. I think he gets it done in round one.
Round one, Greg Gillespie. You're going submission there, yes?
Submission, yeah.
So, Ryan, on the other side, we have Brad Riddell. He's 9-1 overall, 3-0 in the UFC. And I found myself next to him on a treadmill in Las Vegas several months ago. And a lot of the Kiwis and the Aussies have had some tricky navigations as far as returning to their homeland. So Brad Riddell had a big win on Fight Island. And I remember being in Vegas with him like 3 weeks after he won the fight. We're on the treadmill. I'm like, when are you going home? He's like, oh, I got another 5 weeks in the States. So I don't submit that to you for any other reason except that these guys have had a lot of challenges that have been underreported. And I think stylistically, this is a huge challenge for Riddell. But obviously, there's tremendous upside if he can beat a guy like Gregor Gillespie. Rye, what do you think about the co-main and who wins it?
Yeah, you know, this is a really great fight, and they're both super tough. I mean, Brad Riddell broke the orbital bone. The last guy that he fought, his left hook is nasty at all times. You have to look for it. You know, anyone who's training with Eugene and those guys obviously are going to have a really good game plan. They picked the matchup. They agreed to it, so they must finally take a hole somewhere with Gregor.
Right.
The last knockout that he got, Gillespie, you know, we're talking right pre-fight about, or even here in the broadcast about, you know, BJ Penn and Super Saiyan version versus Kenny. Well, you know, Kevin Lee, that's what's capable. You know, Kevin Lee can do that to anybody when he's firing at all cylinders. And Gregor Gillespie got it that night. I mean, that's a dangerous guy coming in. And Kevin Lee took a risk fighting Gregor Gillespie because he's undefeated.
No doubt.
That was almost 9 months ago, though. So taking all that time to recover, it sounds like, John, that's good insight that you know him so well that, you know, him having that kind of base with his personal life and training and taking the time to heal, he's going to be really dangerous. I do believe he's going to keep it to the ground, be really smart and smother him. I do have arm triangle as well, and I'm thinking it's going to be later, though. Brad Riddell's tough to get out early. I think it's going to be third round. He'll have to be tired.
Very interesting stuff. All right, main event, we will lead with you, Ryan Tracy. Kevin Holland, minus 170. Derek Brunson, plus 150. So Brunson, still a dark horse for me in this division. He's won three in a row. That includes a main event knockout of the previously undefeated Edmund Shahbazyan. That was last August. Holland, as is well documented, 5-0 in 2020. That came after a late 2019 loss to Brendan Allen. Brunson, Holland, high stakes here, Ryan, at 185 pounds. Who do you have and how do they get it done?
Man, Brunson is so strong, and you know him coming off of two wins fighting Edward Shahbazyan. I had Shahbazyan in that fight going into it. I really thought that was going to be his chance to make a mark. And
right
again, talking about the seriousness of this sport, you know, next day he's in a neck brace and in a hospital after fighting Derek Brunson. I mean, Derek is really tough and strong and coming in. But Kevin Holland, man, I mean, 5-0 in 1 year. Like, you know, when Dana goes through all those numbers, Dana White, and he goes through how hard it is to get into the UFC and then how hard to get in the top 10 and go into the top five and like the percentages. For Kevin Holland to do that, get in top 10, he's top 10, right?
I think he's got to be at this point. I can check as you're talking, but he's got to be close.
I mean, if he's not, to be 5-0 in that division with all those killers, I don't see how in his first fight coming into this year with the time and rest he had that he's losing it. You know, so I'm going to have him hit the fourth round TKO. I don't know how. But I think that he's going to be able to take him.
Kempfel, what do you think about the main event? Derek Brunson has cashed for a lot of people coming up on 17 or 18 UFC fights, has had a penchant for coming up large when people have discounted him. What do you think about Brunson here out of the red corner in the main event?
You know, for better or worse, Derek Brunson has kind of become that measuring stick for that division, right? And I agree with you. I think that when you underestimate Derek Brunson, that's when he's most dangerous. I think that he sees a great opportunity by being a part of this main event and gaining some more fans and kind of proving that he is one of the top in the division. However, he's going against a guy in Kevin Holland who has a lot of momentum right now, who has been extremely active and who is dangerous on all fronts. He's, you know, maybe his wrestling might be the weakest part of his game, but he's pretty good there too. This guy's got submissions. He's a good striker. He's got the reach. He knows how to use it. He's great at keeping guys on the outside. And I think he's very aware of his vulnerabilities as well. So I think Kevin's a smart fighter. I like him in this fight. I think he gets it done. I think he wins. I'll go with TKO round three. I think if he's able to get by a very tough Derek Brunson, I think he's a guy who could maybe be fighting for the belt later this year or next year.
The middleweight division is not cleaned out with respect to the undisputed champion Israel Adesanya, and certainly whoever emerges this weekend is going to have a lot to say about that. Ryan Tracy from Travis Matthew, if you notice my loud and proud M right here. For all of the things that we don't like about social media, it allows me to connect with somebody like you. I know we've been friends for about a year, but finally seeing your mug today was good for the first time. So at Travis Matthew on Instagram if you want to check out the gear. But Ryan Tracy, great to see you, man. We appreciate the support, and hopefully this makes this fight night a little bit more enjoyable for you this weekend, knowing that you 100%. Went head to head with the great Kenflo.
Thank you both so much for the opportunity. Thanks, Kenny.
Thanks, Ryan.
Ryan Tracy with us for the main event challenge this week. All right, we'll see what happens this weekend. UFC Fight Night, Brunson versus Holland. Will we get a no contest on the main card? Will there be a foul that we're talking about? But I will say, just sort of in putting a bow on things, as far as the scoring and the judging and the officiating, it seems like we end up talking about these things on a almost weekly basis, and it kind of is what it is. And, you know, I try to walk that line where it's still, you know, being honest and critical, but not, you know, being right, too offensively so. But I am a fan at my core, and I print this and I bring it with me to every show. That doesn't mean I've mastered all of this. So I know there are a lot of people out there that want to levy criticism at broadcasters or people out there. And as someone who wasn't even a part of the show, I'm just saying that we are all trying to learn as best we can and inform and make this sport, you know, as good as it can be. So hopefully today's podcast was an exercise and a step in the right direction. That's all.
Absolutely. I mean, listen, and it can get confusing, but that's why you're the best, man. You prepare all the time. And I know you weren't doing it for that reason, but I think that, you know, knowing the rules and keeping up with things and being able to educate the fans on what's going on is super important. You know, and it can get confusing for the fighters as well. You know, we kind of focus so much on just training and fighting and on that end of things. And I think that's why you get situations like, let's say, the Piotr Jan, where he's looking to his corner and asking whether he should knee him or kick him or not. And it's like, I don't know. It's
right.
Yeah.
Well, and again, in diving in this morning, I found out that it was 2 points definitively and not one if Sterling and Jan was to have continued. It also says here, biting in any form is illegal, Ken Flo. You also can't spit on your opponent.
Come on.
So, all right, that's going to do it for today. Thanks to Ryan Tracy for stepping up on the main event challenge. We will be back with more selections next week, of course, for UFC 260, Miocic versus Ngannou 2. Thanks to Ray Longo and, of course, our executive producer, Cody Merrow, truly the lifeblood of this show. Don't forget, merchandise is available, AnnickFlorianPodcast.com. Promo code AF10 to get 10% off of your order. Also, Florian15, I think, for 15% off if you're listening. Sorry, Cody. I love you. Also, don't forget Kenflo's YouTube channel for guys like me that want to just dive into jiu-jitsu 24/7, 365. We will talk to you next Monday, if not sooner. Until then, for Kenflo, I'm John Anik. Don't text and drive. And again, if you want to put your mask above your nose, we can actually go wheels up. Otherwise, you're going to have to deboard the jet plane. I got to get out of here. Yo, later. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. We'll talk to you next week.
I'm Royal Oaks. Next time on Too Many Lawyers, we take on a couple of villains to sort out whether bad stuff is also illegal stuff. George Santos won a seat in Congress by lying to voters, but is that a crime? And Kanye West made it clear he hates Jews. In England, he'd go to jail for that. Here in America, did he commit a hate crime? Listen to Too Many Lawyers on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family, and 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start. Same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Beckles AB to CV 2024, Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.